Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. This is a podcast on a special subject that seems to be concerning lots of people. I was contacted by people just today about dozens of people that they know that are losing their jobs because of the mandates of taking the shot or being fired. And some people are absolutely are positive that they do not want to take this medical treatment. And so they are moving literally often out of the state. We know other people that secretly took the shot and are now in the hospital. We hear all kinds of rumors and even scientific testimony of doctors and scientists that there is something wrong with the idea of mandating these injections. And so we're going to have a discussion here today about this and share with you some of the things that we're finding out. Now, there's a lot of things that we're finding out that we share on the network and the Living Network. And the way the Living Network works is the same way that the early church worked, was that the people sat down in groups of tens, hundreds, and thousands, and information was shared through that network so that people would know what was going on. But also, the needs of the people were often met through that network. We see Paul going all over the known world at that time, providing welfare for people and assistance for people that were suffering under what the Bible refers to as dearths that were taking place as famines that were caused by a number of things, not just weather changes at that time, but also supplies of grain, etc., where people were finding themselves in a world of hurt because the Roman Empire and the Imperial Roman cult that provided for the needy of society was breaking down, and Christ had implemented and appointed and set up both while he was here and at Pentecost a network of people that actually cared about each other as much as they cared about themselves. So we also know that people were warned of famines that were coming, some of these dearths that were coming, and they were able to prepare for it because they had advanced knowledge through that network with people such as Agabus. And those of you who have gone along with our studies on the minor prophets also know that there was a big problem with the mountains of Samaria, which are the people that gather together to provide truth to the people. That's what Samara means, is truth. And they were not giving the people the truth. So we're going to meet here today and talk a little bit about, and we have a lot more information than we'll even be able to get to, what is the truth? And I have with me as a guest James Williams, who's in contact with Oregon Health Department and with the other chief health officers in local counties, which is different than the Oregon Health Department, as well as senators and congressmen and even the governor, or Kate Brown, who is in politics here in the state of Oregon. But many of these same things are going to apply to all the other states. And many of the remedies that we're going to talk about will probably apply in many of the other countries that are a part of the network already. So with that, I'll let James start off. And I've got all kinds of notes, and he's been thinking about this very heavily for weeks. And so we'll just see where we go from here. We have this somewhat unprepared, but we've been preparing ourselves. And we're going to share with you what our thoughts and ideas are. So James, take it away.
Thank you for having me on. I think one of the points that I've been struggling with lately is this idea, and I've heard it a lot over the last year and a half, that this isn't a political issue, or shouldn't be. I think what most people have been saying is that, oh no, it should be a medical issue. We need to stop making it political. Well, I wholeheartedly agree that as far as the vaccines are concerned, as far as medical treatment and prescriptions and advice, those should remain to be a medical issue. And they should be conversations between one's doctor, their primary physician, and themselves. The problem is that it is political. and it has become political. It became political the moment you involved the government, and the government issued things such as mandates via governmental policy. Because now it's in the realm of governance. And governance, however, is a very political issue because of the high potential it has of affecting and inflicting great harm on the individuals that live within our communities and our states and counties and so forth. So it is political, and it can't help but be political when it comes to people's freedom, their liberties, and their right to choose what is ultimately, or what they feel, is ultimately best for themselves and their families and their lives, and the individual's freedom to choose and pursue happiness. Let's separate those two real quick, and then we'll move on to some other questions, but I just want to set the basis for this discussion.
The politicizing of issues such as individual choices concerning your health has become a rampant problem. And there is huge amounts of misinformation concerning, you know, is there danger from unvaccinated people? Are unvaccinated people causing the new variants that are supposedly causing new illnesses, supposedly running rampant first over places like India and then now spreading to other nations, you know, like the Delta variant? Where did these things come from? Are they coming from the vaccinated population or are they coming from the unvaccinated population?
So that's a really good question. And to some, they would feel like they have the answer. And then you ask someone else and they have the answer. And I think everyone's been saying, oh, there's so much misinformation out there. I agree. And I think that's one of the points that the other side has been making, is like, oh, there's just so much information. You can't trust anything. The problem is that you have a group that is saying, okay, don't worry about this. There's a lot of misinformation. We'll sort it out for you. We'll tell you what's true. And anyone who differs from our opinion is just false. And yeah, you're not allowing the public to make up their own mind and to make their individual choice based on the prescriptions or medical advice of their own physicians. And then, and ultimately, there's still even then a choice that the individual makes. And I think when the way medicine is set up now, where so many doctors' licenses and their certifications and their ability to even practice are entirely dependent on what they say, and that has become political, that's dangerous. Because then doctors are held back from saying or prescribing certain medical treatments.
And there's a reason why they're doing that, and that's some of the things that a person can put together. But if I were to just quote Bloomberg article that just appeared August 26, 2021, written by Michelle Faye Cortez, states very clearly previous COVID prevents previous cases of COVID. In other words, you had COVID, got better. 99% of the people who get COVID are better than 99% of the people who get COVID, get better, and they have a natural immunity. And what they're now discovering is that previous COVID cases prevents Delta infection better than the Pfizer shot. And so you say, oh, wow, that's something. What is it, like 10% better, 20% better? Well, if it was two times better, it would be 100% better if you got natural immunity than if you got the Pfizer shot. But that isn't the number they're giving us. They're not giving us twice as good. They're not giving us three times as good. They're not giving us five times as good. They're not giving us 10 times as good. But their article states that it is 13 times better to become immune to COVID naturally than by using a Pfizer shot. So immediately you'd want to measure, are there any bad things about getting a Pfizer shot? And of course, there are all kinds of bad things about getting a Pfizer shot. And those things are showing up more and more. We were ill prepared to know how bad it was because there wasn't the animal trials. There wasn't the at least minimum of 2 to 3 to 5 years of study. And they came out with the shot and they're sending it out experimentally. So I gave you that one article, which is available. People can go look it up online, and I gave you the author of it and the date of it. But there's also Zev Chaffetz, who wrote an article June 30th, 2021, also in the Bloomberg, and I could go through dozens of different publications that tell us the same thing. What will the Delta variant do to Israel's herd immunity? Because in another article, Citizens Journal, that talks about, the end of the debate is Israeli study shows natural immunity 13 times more effective than vaccines at stopping Delta. So we're reading all these articles. Most people don't have the time to read these, articles. They're telling you that, that natural immunity is better. We can go to the studies and the, immunologists, top immunologists in Iceland. They're now rolling back and they realize that they cannot have any solution in the vaccines that isn't far, far, far better simply by seeking out natural immunity. And we see the same thing in Denmark. Mm-hmm. They've removed all their mandates and strategies and protocols concerning, you know, the forcing the people to avoid natural immunity, because they realize that natural immunity is the only way to go. Now, we gave early on dozens of the top virologists and immunologists in the world were saying the same things way back at the beginning, but all that information was oppressed and suppressed. Now, I have an article out at preparingyou.com. The reason I say look at that is because I link to these other studies. I may put some of these other articles so you can find the URLs to them. The question is, what is going on? I know more people personally in my personal network that have died after receiving the vaccination or sick in the hospital after receiving the vaccination than I know died of COVID. Mm-hmm. In my personal people that I know. And it's not a small amount. It's actually a large amount of people. So what is really going on? Now that's not scientific evidence, but like I said, we link to a lot of other scientific evidence.
Right.
So, James has been trying to find out data and information. I thought we'd throw in this story because you could probably verify it a little bit better. One of the first things that you did when you became commissioner is that evidently the commissioners, there's a group of commissioners, including one judge or something, that looks at legislation that is going to appear in front of the Oregon legislation. And early on, before anybody even knew anything about COVID or coronavirus or any up and coming pandemic, a bill was to appear in front of the Oregon legislature about forcing vaccination.
Correct.
And there was no pandemic. There was no threat. There was somebody went to all the trouble of making this bill out.
Right.
And going to present it to Congress.
And they did a test run.
And they do a test run to the county commissioners to see if they can get the approval. And from what I understand, they almost got the approval, but you spoke up and things shifted slightly at that time.
I think there was a lot of pushback. I believe his name, he's one of the Kennedys. He had come to Oregon to protest against that and join the protest against that bill.
Right.
Del Bigtree had come and we got to meet. He's an interesting gentleman. And there was a lot of people that came out and just for the freedom of choice over the vaccine. And we did end up voting that down on the floor. Anyway, long story short, yeah, we... The county commissioners, we have an organization here in Oregon called, we call it AOC, not to be confused with Alexandria Cortez. It is Association of Oregon Counties, and it is our own association, and it is an association primarily run by counties, by the 36 counties in the state of Oregon. Within that association, we have these committees. Where commissioners can sit on and we review them. And ultimately, we look at bills that typically are of county concern. We can't review all the bills that go through the legislature, but we are primarily looking for bills that might have the potential of either trampling on the rights of the citizenry or step on county discretion. As counties are their own local governments in their own right, and there's a certain amount of authority that we wield and have granted to us by the Constitution, such as being the public and mental health authority of the land. So we have these individual committees. I sit on the Governance and Revenue Committee. I also sit on the Legislative Committee, and we have multiple other. We have Transportation Committee, where we deal with road issues and so forth and funding for roads. We have Natural Resource Committee, where we deal with IGAs, MOUs, whatever it might be between
the county governments and public lands and how those relationships work. And I mean, everything can come in there, come into that committee between water issues and wolf issues. We also have the Health and Human Services Committee, which is where this vaccination bill originated, or not originated, excuse me, where I originally came across it. And it was presented to the counties in that format that we were to review. There were some counties that were perfectly fine with it, and they supported it because they knew friends, or they had senators or representatives that they were friends with that they were trying to get favors through and to see if they could get the county support. Because ultimately, if you can get county support and the support of the Association of Oregon Counties, it's a big deal for your bill that you can bring it to the legislature and you can say, hey, the counties are all supportive of this, and they're on board. Needless to say, it did not have our support, and I believe I was the one vote that turned it down from AOC support, and it moved on to legislative committee. We voted it down there as well by a larger margin, and then it moved on to it moved on in its legislative process. But anyway, the bill did die in the 2019 session. 2020, of course, hit the very next year, and I remember hearing the murmurs and saying, oh, you know, if only we'd have passed that bill, and which was interesting because the vaccine wasn't around yet. And people were thinking of what the vaccine will be here. It would have been good to have passed that bill so we could have forced a vaccine, whatever it might be. No, I mean, it wasn't even in existence yet, and they were already talking about forcing it on the population. So I remember having a moment back then thinking, oh man, this is going to be bad. They will come back for this. And they talked about it during the emergency session and that they had in 2020 in the special session. And I guarantee you that you will see that bill resurface in 2021, 2022 session. So I think it goes back to that saying that bills don't die. They just get rewritten and get proposed in another way. 2019 was a famous year for bills that had died years before. But the Democrats had a supermajority in Oregon, and they were going to utilize it to pass some really bad bills that they weren't able to pass in years prior. So there were all these bills, I mean, thousands of bills, same thing in 2020, thousands of bills that should never have seen the light of day. And in any normal balanced legislature, they would have died. But here they were resurfacing because they could potentially have life breathed back into them, and people could get their little axe grinded away, and they could get their agenda passed and push it through. It was an incredible process to watch, everything between climate change bills and plastic bag bills and all sorts of different things here in Oregon. And then, of course, we saw the worst of all, which was executive authority on the office of the governor being solidified by the legislature to where she would have this enormous amount of executive arbitrary authority. And that created a lot of issues that we're still dealing with. So all in all, there's been a lot of bad bills over the past, and I think this has always been sort of an agenda to be able to mandate medical treatment onto a population, and here we are.
One of the Supreme Court rulings that they depend upon saying that, oh, we have a right to force vaccinations on you, is a 1906 ruling concerning somebody from Sweden who was Jacobson, I believe was his name. And he had been vaccine injured by the smallpox vaccine, which is actually a true vaccine. And one of the first vaccines ever created was the smallpox vaccine. And of course, to some degree, the smallpox vaccine could have great effect in limiting the number of people that would get sick from smallpox. And it was able to do this for several reasons. One is that, the smallpox is only people who get smallpox, as we know, smallpox is human beings. There are other similar diseases such as cowpox that are like smallpox, but we don't get cowpox. But if we're exposed to cowpox, we may develop a natural immunity to smallpox. And that's, they realized this, and from that they created the smallpox vaccination. Now, there are side effects even to smallpox vaccination, and thousands upon thousands of people were killed because of improperly created smallpox vaccines, and that's all well documented, but they don't promote that because that doesn't promote, that makes people vaccine hesitant.
We don't want people to be hesitant about vaccination.
You don't want to, they don't even want you to have a conversation. But Robert Kennedy Jr., who is pro-vaccine, that James was trying to remember the full name, but
yeah, it was Robert Kennedy.
Yeah, Robert Kennedy Jr., he's actually pro-vaccine. He's not an anti-vaxxer. He's often labeled that way. He is pro-safe vaccinations. And whether you think all vaccinations are safe or none are safe, that's left up, because that's going to be debated forever.
So, and there's an interesting part of that is the, we can say that will be debated forever. And that's a real shame, the idea that it will be debated that all vaccines are safe or all vaccines are dangerous. I won't go as far to say that all vaccines are dangerous or too dangerous to the point of killing you or death. It might depend on the individual. It might be more deadly for one person over another, and you have to weigh those risks and those benefits as on an individual basis, the same as a doctor prescribes medicine on an individual basis. You know, he needs to see his patient, he needs to know his medical history, he needs to know before he prescribes treatment. That's normal. That's the way it's supposed to work. And then the idea of saying, well, all vaccines are safe, and I wish I could say that I haven't heard people say that, but I have, saying that vaccinations are perfectly safe because they all get tested and they all get run through a process before they go to human trials and so forth. That is disingenuous, and that is part of the problem.
That's not scientific.
Correct. And I'll just, for the sake of argument, I'll jump over here on the side of, you know, being pro-vaccination and pro-this and pro-that and all those other things. And I'll just say, if I want to combat vaccine hesitancy and I want the population to feel comfortable and safe getting the vaccine.
Have the conversation
and don't, above all, don't lie to people and tell them that there's absolutely nothing to fear. Of course there is.
Something to be concerned about.
There
are thousands upon thousands of reported deaths from any medication, that's cause to be concerned, especially for medications for a disease that has a 99% plus survival rate. Mm-hmm. And does have other treatments. And we're going to talk briefly about some of the things, because people are contacting us. What do we do about a religious exemption? What do we do about, medical exemptions? How do we stop this? Because they are being forced to get vaccinations against their will. Now, they'll say, well, we're not forcing you, like the Emperor of Canada. Although he's not normally called an emperor, but he acts like one. He says, oh, you have the choice of whether you get a vaccination or not. But if you don't get the vaccination, you can't get on our buses. You can't get on our trains. You can't get on our planes. You probably won't be able to work in companies that are incorporated by this state of Canada. And, of course, we see the same thing in Australia. We see it going on in New York. We've heard the president say that possibly, which they're already doing in Australia, that you cannot travel from state to state. We should make it criminal to travel from state to state if you don't have a vaccine passport. And this is the same executive leader of a country that is allowing thousands, even millions of people to come across their southern border with no passport, vaccine mm-hmm. passport or not, actually even testing positive for COVID and bust at government expense to the inner cities all over the United States. This is like, are you crazy? Are you insane? but now so many people don't even want to listen to the conversation. They don't want to look at the facts. They want to assume that all this is, that there's no way on earth that anybody is making bad decisions for me. I know this from what you were just talking about. This is crossing my mind. When I was younger, I went to more doctors than I can remember. Mm-hmm. But I do not want politicians prescribing medication for me.
Correct.
I don't trust all doctors. I know some doctors are really good. Mm-hmm. Some doctors are really bad. Mm-hmm. I do not want to, you know, you always,
and you always have a right to a second opinion.
Stay in your lane. You say that's something I hear you always, that's not my job.
Well, that's something that was told to me before I took office. My predecessor, who was probably one of the most educated, commissioners this county had ever had. Very thoughtful, very well-spoken, educated gentleman. He served for 12 years and, was not beaten, in an election process. He just decided, I'm done. He did 12 years and he was done and he walked away.
It wasn't your immediate predecessor. This is somebody else in.
No, it was my immediate, predecessor. He had been in there for 12 years and he stepped out and then I ran for that open seat. And
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
So, and he would always say, and everyone that works at the county still remembers this. And he told me this as a word of advice when I went to him, asked him, hey, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? I went to him for some pointers and for advice on what I should consider. And he said, just stay in your lane and don't trample on other people's authority. Don't circumvent supervisors. Don't go around trying to fix everyone's problem and stepping out of your lane and cause problems. You can solve those problems, but do it appropriately and follow the process. And that was something that he always said.
Yeah. Now, one thing crosses my mind when you said that, stay in your lane and don't buck other people's authority. Well, this is what I see.
Well, you can buck people's authority. You can question their judgment. Oh. When you just don't jump into someone else's role of authority and be anyone else than you should be. You don't give orders when you don't have the authority to give them. You don't play president. You don't play doctor. And doctors need to make sure they're not playing politicians, vice versa.
And this is where it comes back down to the citizenry. And I just had this conversation with somebody, actually in Lakeview, who is talking about, you know, civil rights. And there are two kinds of civil rights that are defined throughout history, and you even look it up in a law dictionary. There are civil rights not connected to the administration of government. Those are sometimes referred to as inalienable rights, natural rights. And then there are civil rights that are connected to the administration of government. And so those can vary for each individual as those individuals become more connected to government. But the reality is what I'm seeing today, now a lot of people are feeling, and sometimes accurately, sometimes inaccurately applying the rule, is that we have politicians and media and even your next door neighbor getting in the lane of the individual who has a right to make choices about his life. Now, I will agree, and I will explain, and I have in many books that I've written, that you may lose access to some of those choices, what the Greeks called exousia, if you become too connected to government, too dependent upon government. One of the big dangers that top immunologists, like Dr. Michael Yeadon, Dr. Robert Malone, Dr. Sukarit Bhakti of Germany, even Dr. Stephen Key. These are doctors with 10,000 sites into their name, where other doctors and other scientists are citing them as great sources of information. Dr. Luc Montagnier from France. All of them are extremely concerned about a thing that is sometimes identified as ADE, antibody dependent enhancement. And the studies that we include, we only put a few in. Some of them are very complicated, but we give you links to them so that those of you who are ready to read these studies that are recent studies, just this month, they've come out. And some of them are peer-reviewed, and we even include a study that's not peer-reviewed just to give you an example of what kind of misinformation that is coming about. But they're all concerned about this AD, antibody-dependent enhancement, that is actually causing deaths and may cause considerable deaths before we're all done with this. But we don't know because the studies simply were not done. And the long-range studies were never done with mRNA vaccinations. They terminated every single one of the studies that they did have. And So there's a serious danger coming here. Now we have some of these same doctors I just mentioned saying without question that the new Delta variants and these other variants that are coming along, and the studies that just came out of Japan and Oxford confirm this, that these new strains are not coming out of the unvaccinated population who have immunities up to 13 times that of the ones who get the vaccination. But these new strains are coming out of only the vaccinated population. And that one of the questions raised in one of these studies, which you can go read and look for yourself, says that we need boosters, because these are all advocates of, they're trying to figure out what to do, because they see the effectiveness of the vaccines, like the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine, dropping from 95% to 78% to 60-some percent. And it's down into the 30% as of the last studies I've looked at, but it's rapidly going down. They've only been out a year, and this is what Israel was realizing, the effectiveness was dropping, which is now Israel is saying, and one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, Iceland is saying, one of the most vaccinated countries in the world, that the only way to protect the population from this is natural immunity and not the vaccines.
Correct.
And the vaccines are actually creating an environment where the individual is producing new strains that may make children far more susceptible to these coronavirus variants than they were with the original. And so the vaccines may actually be creating an environment that is going to incubate more dangerous. And I'm saying may. It appears from the studies that they are doing this already, but I say may because I want to be scientific about this. I don't want to jump to conclusions like we hear people jumping to conclusions all the time that, you know, that if you don't get vaccinated, you're making me vulnerable.
Yeah.
No, that is, there's no science.
Or making comparisons to seatbelt laws or whatever else might be.
Or the sinking of the Titanic.
Yeah, right.
Which is almost comical, except for the fact that real people are really dying. Story of the Morgan.
I'd refrain from which county it was, but I, you know, just something that you said there struck me before I go into that story. I was listening to Joe Rogan the other night, and he had a doctor, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, who came on his show. And Dr. Rhonda Patrick has like a PhD in biomedical science. She says that AED basically doesn't exist, and that's false, all false. And she says there's tons of misinformation out there, and we need to combat it. And she says, and she lists, there's a lot of things that I could go into, but here's all the things that you need to just, you know, throw out the window, basically, because they're false. And she goes down this big long list, and or ADE, excuse me, isn't real. That's not really a thing. It's not affecting it on any kind of grand scale. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, there are a lot of doctors that disagree with you.
And
maybe you just don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And maybe you just aren't sure. But when there's that many top doctors, as you say, that say, no, this is a really big issue. You have whole countries saying the only way we're going to reach herd immunity is if we do it naturally. And I'm not trying to weasel out of getting a shot. I'm not trying to make excuses for anyone. I'm simply trying to bring up the facts. And again, we come back to that whole concept of people that want you to take the vaccine, of one side saying things like, there's absolutely no danger. You're just being silly. You're not being logical, or maybe even discrediting your argument and you personally entirely by reducing you to an immoral person because you just don't care about grandma. You just simply don't care about lives, and you're putting everyone's lives in jeopardy because you just don't care. You're an immoral waste of a human being. And that is such a cop-out from being able to discuss, articulate, and debate the actual facts. And so we get into this realm of they want to make the argument that it's 100% safe. And that, I'll tell you this, is 100% false. And I'll give you some facts to back that up.
Because this comment, the statement in itself is so naive and arrogant. Right. Completely unscientific.
There is no vaccine that is completely safe.
And I'll give you an example of that.
Scientists will say that.
If that was true.
That you can't get a vaccine safely.
Correct. No, absolutely. And I'm not saying this because I want to, because I'm trying to make any kind of an argument that vaccines are dangerous and you shouldn't ever get them. But here's the facts. In the 1980s, they made it basically impossible to sue any pharmaceutical company for a vaccination. Even if it was made badly, even if it was a bad batch or just a mess up, there is no liability whatsoever on the pharmaceutical companies. You know who the liability is on? Not the government, the people. You cannot sue the government and you cannot sue the pharmaceutical companies. You are entirely down to basically settling in what they call the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, which is the equivalent of a vaccine injury court. And to this day, over $4 billion last year, or up to last year from when this, when the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program came into effect in 1988, it reached $4 billion being paid out in that vaccine injury court process. So that means, and so those are just the people that settled, that were able to prove that they had a vaccine injury.
It's also only people who are able to make a claim.
Correct.
Early on, because there's all kinds of little technicalities if you don't make the claim in a proper time.
And who are you using to make to bring your proof forward? Potentially the doctor who prescribed the vaccination in the first place.
And you have to
accept that liability?
You have to have the
Absolutely.
Time. You're dealing with a vaccine injured child or a husband, and you also have to mount a legal defense.
Which in which case you could actually make the argument that disproportionately affects and takes advantage of the
poor.
The poor.
Yeah.
And the minorities of our population.
The people least equipped to deal with these injuries.
Correct. Or to go through that process in order to prove that there was an injury. Now, the very existence of that program, though, proves irrefutably that there is no such thing as a vaccine with zero negative consequences. Now, you could say, and some could say, that the benefits outweigh the risk.
In some places, that might be true.
And that's just it. On an individual basis, that very well could be true. And that is why we leave it to an individual basis. And we do not allow governments to mandate treatment where doctors haven't even seen the patient.
Right.
That is not scientific, and it isn't good medicine.
And
at all.
Going back to the Jacobson case, which was the Supreme Court case way back in the early days that they depend upon. And I've read those. I read the debates back in 1906 in Oregon when they were discussing forced vaccination even then. Jacobson case is if he refused to take the vaccine, he had to pay $5 and he could not take the vaccine. That was it.
Pay to play.
Yeah. If he refused to take the vaccine, he had to pay $5. Now they could come back after a period of time and ask him to take it again. If he refused, it'd be another $5. And this could go on and it might end up costing him $15, $20, $30. Dollars were worth more in those days.
That's
so it
true.
Is an amount,
$5 but, is actually would have been quite significant.
Yeah, it's somewhat significant, but it isn't like we're going to hold you down and give you the vaccination.
He
had to do was move out of the town because the ruling was that the local health authority could impose these mandates because if he gets sick, supposedly, and spreads smallpox, it's only going to affect the local people. It wasn't on a national basis. It was only there in that Massachusetts township that he was being forced to take it. If he moved out of that township, he didn't have to take it. He didn't have to pay the $5. This idea of making a blanket rule for millions of people, this is only in the imagination of despots. This is not right. What those rulings, but people don't read these rulings. They don't read these cases. They don't read the counter cases. We do. I do. And I share it with other people. Back to ADE, we'll briefly say, I mean, you just go, you can even Google it, but I didn't use Google. I used Bing at this time, but it tells you that, even Pfizer talks about evidence of this pathogenic priming in adults, which is what ADE is. ADE is a made-up term by people trying to deal with this phenomena that occurs when the antibodies generated during an immune response recognize and bind to the pathogen, but they are unable to prevent infection. Instead, these antibodies act as a Trojan horse, allowing the pathogen to get into cells and exacerbate the immune response. That's what ADE is. They made up a name, antibody-dependent enhancement. In the studies that we quote, they never mention ADE. Of course, it was a study in Japan where they may not use that particular phrase. It's still dealing with pathogenic priming, but they describe it perfectly and mention enhancement 90 times in the study. And they even explain the process of what they believe is going on with the different proteins. And they realize that this is where they came to the conclusion that they'll need some kind of booster. But their question was, if we create a booster, how do we prevent the same process from taking place in the booster?
Right.
And the more you do this, the more exacerbated, that's the word they use, the immune response becomes. And this is where you get autoimmune diseases. It's also where you can actually get to the point where you have no immunity to the disease in the wild virus form. And then you become, you end up with what they call a cytokine response, where you have an extreme response, whereas before you got 102 fever, now you're getting 104, 105
because you're antibody dependent.
Yeah, you're antibody dependent, and your body is confused as to what antibodies to produce. Right. This is why.
Because, well, it hasn't been producing them.
Yes.
It's being fed them.
It's been dependent upon what the vaccination was bringing to your system. And this is why more and more scientists in countries, you could say Iceland and
Japan isn't like a third world country.
Right.
And neither is Iceland. Yeah. Iceland's an incredibly advanced country, very wealthy. It stands on its own.
And they, what they did, they're, like I say, they're one of the top, I think there's a second most vaccinated country in the world.
Right.
They're highly intelligent and, highly educated.
Right.
And but they're also a microcosm. They can look at what's going on in their country really close detail.
Correct.
And because of that, they have immediately come up with, not immediately, but eventually they have come up now with the conclusion that the vaccines are not working. Every time you hear vaccine breakthrough case, this is a breakthrough case. That's vaccine failure.
Mm-hmm.
They just, it sounds better if you say it broke through our barricade. But they know. Israel is saying this, was saying it months and months ago, that the immunity is dropping. That Japanese study is just showing the actual mechanical process in the genome system of immunity, how and why the immunity is dropping. So now this comes to the point, and a lot of doctors don't read this literature. They're busy. I understand that. A lot of people don't read this literature because they don't have the time. So the people who do take the time should provide the service, but we see an actual pushback, certainly in the media, certainly, Google, Facebook, Twitter, that if you suggest that there may be a problem, and there may be, these problems that these studies are saying exists.
Mm-hmm. And they're not stupid people that are talking about this.
No.
Like I'm saying, like Japan, these are very credible, very educated scientists with long careers. And they're not, unlike the people that we have advising us here in Oregon, one of them is the former head of ODF&W, and one of them's a pediatrician who's sitting there giving us.
That's the Oregon Health Authority.
That's the Oregon Health Authority.
Somebody on OF.
Dr. Seidlinger is the epidemiologist for the state of Oregon, and he is just a pediatrician.
Yeah. And the other guy, I don't remember what his name is. Do you?
Pat Allen.
Okay.
Pat Allen is the head of OHA, and I think his background is ODF&W.
Yeah.
Do you go to the ODF&W for medical advice?
Not me.
In fact, I'm pretty sure most people, they just go for a hunting license.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. And so, some of the other doctors, Dr. Michael Yaden, former vice president of Pfizer. Right. And the chief medical scientist of Pfizer has been saying since way back at the beginning that you do not want to take these vaccinations if you ever want to have children, male or female.
Right. Now, and there's all kinds of studies out there saying, oh, no, this is fake news. Absolutely, it will not affect
them. Well, it's not fake news that he said it.
No, and it's not.
So, but they want to discredit him. But the reality is that if you look at the studies and you look at the law, mm-hmm. if there is any evidence, which according to Michael Yeading, longtime scientist, longtime, not an anti-vaxxer. He's always believed in vaccinations. All his family is vaccinated. But he also was there when they were producing this. And he says, for whatever reason, ask him. He does explain himself, if you can still see his YouTube. But I have other employees, whistleblowers at Pfizer mm-hmm. that have come out. Karen Kingston. She worked for Pfizer. She is in the job of looking at patents to make sure right. there's not patent conflict. She is extremely knowledgeable. And she says, and she explains in great detail, but you won't even probably find Karen Kingston on YouTube. You'll have to go to BitChute to look for her because they stop her from speaking.
Right. They're limiting her speech because they say, oh, this isn't good or this is false information. We're going to cut it completely out. Wait a minute.
Where's the conversation?
A fact checker on YouTube is going to give an opinion against someone who has a doctorate or someone that has this professional background.
20 years experience?
Yeah.
And a former...
Say, well, this doesn't go along with the narrative. I have to get rid of this. Because that's what it is.
Pfizer it doesn't thought fit she the was smart enough to hire.
Right.
And so now all of a sudden we're not supposed to look at her. And I also want to mention, I don't know how far we're going to go with this, but the acting attorney general at the Office of Legal Counsel, Donna Elizabeth Johnson, that's Johnson, S-E-N at the end, so you can look her up. She's the one who put out the memo, and it's only a memo. It's not mm-hmm. a law. And I went through a lot of laws this morning, and I went through a lot of the CFRs this morning because of some things that Karen Kingston mentioned in a video interview that she was in. And but this memo that was put out by Johnson says that businesses can fire you if you refuse to get a vaccine. And now I know of businesses that not only say they can fire you, you will not get unemployment when they fire you if you refuse the vaccination. A vaccination that is still a test. It is still, the people say it was approved. It's not regularly approved. It's approved to be used under limited criteria. And I went and read the criteria. One of the criteria, there can be no other alternative to the vaccine. Well, we know from the study at Israel that there is another alternative called mm-hmm. natural immunity that is very low risk for 99% of the people. And not only is it an alternative, it is 13 times better alternative than the vaccine. Has no ADE attached to it, no pathogenic priming attached to it, by any evidence, scientific evidence anywhere that I've been able to uncover. So that's an alternative. There are these other, I was always wondering, when I read the original article that was published now almost 6 years ago, 5 years before coronavirus came out, right. coronavirus as COVID-19 came
yeah,
out.
Yeah, as COVID-19, because COVID's been around for a long time.
Yeah, and NIH had said that hydroxychloroquine and zinc was a game changer. Mm-hmm. That's a quote right out of an NIH published study that says that it had remarkable results. And then immediately we see people like Fauci, supposedly Dr. Fauci, yep. coming out saying, oh, well, no, it doesn't. And then the media just goes nuts. But nobody refers to the original NIH article. Instead, they referred to a Lancet study, which had to be withdrawn because it had no verification, or a European study, which I name, and we have an article, The Science, also at Preparing You. You mm-hmm. can go, and we have a link so you can go look at these studies.
Right.
And the fact is the European study was not studying hydroxychloroquine and zinc. It was studying heavy, heavy doses of hydroxychloroquine without the zinc for patients that were already on death's door, none of which have been prescribed or even suggested by any of the doctors I know that have been using hydroxychloroquine. It's always as a prophylactic early on in exposure where you first begin to show symptoms and they claim great success, which is exactly what the NIH said 6 years ago. But the media just pounced on it, made fun of it, ridiculed it. Why? I kept saying, why are they doing this? What's their motivation? Are they just incompetent? Are they just fear-mongering? Well, if there is an alternative treatment, any coercion to make you take this vaccination is violation of their own rules. Mm-hmm. And so I may go over before we're done here and list some of those rules. I heard some of them listed originally or just briefly listed in the Karen Kingston video, that the interview, which, like I said, you can get on BitChute. And if you join our network, we can get you, show you the links to those things. I haven't put that up because if I put those links up on the article, we're going to be shut down.
Yep.
I'm sure we're already,
Oh, you're on a list.
Yeah. You know, I've been so on a list for a long time.
Yeah. We're all on a list. And I mean,
but I don't want to lose what little effectiveness we have in getting this information out. But that's why we're telling people to join the network, and join the, what we call the living network, which again is the plan that Christ originally had. And that's why he demanded, actually commanded the word that we see in the Bible, that his disciples, which were the ministers he was training up, you know, Peter and John and the rest of them, he commanded, along with the 70 and the 120 in the upper room, he commanded that they make the people sit down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands, because during the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, during the dearths that swept across the Roman Empire, the famines that swept across the Roman Empire, the economic breakdown that swept across the Roman Empire, as the decline and fall of the Roman Empire continued to progress, that network was absolutely essential for those, for the salvation, for the saving of the lives of the Christians in that turmoil and chaos. And you have to remember, Christ said the kingdom of God is for the living. It's not for the dead. So this network that he was creating, clearly commanding that his ministers create, was absolutely essential for the survival or salvation of life for the followers of Christ. And we chronicle that history and show how that was going on and what they were doing. And so we're trying to share that with other people. But one of the big problems was the truth was not always getting out.
Right.
Throughout history of the prophets, that they were coming up and saying, they're not sharing the truth with you. They're shutting down the conversation. Now we see it in a big way. And we need to alter our relationship. You know, MSNBC, CNN, they're not telling you the truth. Yeah. Twitter, Facebook, they're censoring the truth. I can't tell you exactly what the truth is, but I can tell you what I find, and I back it up with, you know, that's why I'm quoting these articles from Bloomberg, these studies from Israel, the studies from Iceland and Japan and Oxford. As that they're saying this, that there is ADE, that there is pathogenic priming, that the ones who are producing the new variants are the vaccinated, and now they want to vaccinate the entire U.S. military. The guys who are, there are numerous guys that I know of who have left the military.
Yeah.
Already, for other reasons, because they're disappointed in the way in which they handled Afghanistan and everything. Those guys who have left are not going to be forced to get the vaccination in the military. Mm-hmm. And if you refuse to get it, you're going to get a dishonorable discharge. That's what they're stating now. I've seen the statements from officers that that's what they're claiming. And, of course, that's going to cut their purse strings. But the good thing that can come out of that, if we create a network of people who actually care about their neighbor as much as they care about themselves, that would not even consider forcing their neighbor to get a vaccination they do not want.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we see on both Democratic side
and Republican side, people that want to exercise force on their neighbor.
Right. At meetings that we've had in this county, we have a very low vaccination rate in this county.
The lowest vaccination rate in the state.
And he says that with a degree tone of pride. So anyway, they which probably upset some people
I'm sure
in the upper halls of
but you know
chances are they won't be listening to us. But
no, you need to be surprised. And if they are, I hope that they can kind of get an understanding of where I'm coming from. And here's the other thing I want to touch on while we're having this discussion. We're talking about Christianity. We're talking about forcing one's neighbor to, you know, you were kind of touching on the fact that we have both Republicans and Democrats that want to turn their leaders into dictators. And goes back to something that I've often said is that most men are perfectly fine with having a dictator. They just want it to be their dictator. And I think that those in leadership need to be very careful, especially now and in these times, that they don't fall on their own sword, because that is what will happen. Even David, a king after God's own heart, he fell, he made mistakes, and he had to repent from them. Yes, but
Saul failed to repent, and Saul did die on his own sword. Right. This is what I call the Saul syndrome. And the fact is that Saul did not gain power because he rose in authority and usurped it.
Yeah.
He was given the power by the people. And mm-hmm. Samuel, if anybody wants to go read Samuel 8, the Bible warns exactly what will happen. And one of those things, one of those warnings I just copied today, was that he will take your sons and make them run before his chariots, which is a vulnerable place. If you run before the chariot, you're liable to get run right. over if you slip and fall. Of course, that's what we're seeing in Afghanistan.
A way of making them pawns.
Yeah, they just become instruments of his own will. And this is, I believe, why a great many of the military are now resigning their commissions. Now, everybody doesn't have a commission to resign.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are in there, and they're going to be kicked out with a dishonorable discharge because they refuse to take the vaccination. They're right. already being kicked out because they're outspoken about and they're sickened by what they see on the ground. We've got a lot of media running interference. I don't think we should have ever been in Afghanistan to begin with, but wherever you find yourself in the world, when you start taking these moral stands,
mm-hmm.
I'm for you. I that courage is a virtue, and it may only be a start. Maybe that's where it starts with you, is right. with courage, but then we need to take it further from there. And I've been quoting people like Alexis Tocqueville for quite some time now, and several of the shows that we've been doing. But the way the governments get power today is this tutelary despotism, where they offer you benefits. Plutarch said it, the greatest destroyers of freedom are the granters of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. Polybius said, you know, the people with an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them by the rule of force degenerate. He goes on in a great deal more detail.
And to perfect savages.
Into perfect savages and finding once more a monarch and a king.
I'm aware of the quote.
So all of these things that are going on, one of the very first things, and I just loved it when I stumbled upon it, reading Alexis Tocqueville. He says, despotism, suspicious by its very nature, views the separation of men as the best guarantee of its own permanence, and usually does all it can to keep them in isolation. Does that sound familiar for the last 2 years? He goes on to say, no defect of human heart suits it better than egoism. You're going to have to be willing to see that you have been fooled. Liberty is a product of humility as much as it is a product of courage. And it is certainly a product of compassion. No defect of human heart suits it better than egoism. A tyrant is relaxed enough to forgive his subjects for failing to love him, provided they do not love one another. Christ came to set you free, and it is absolutely essential that you love one another. In a government, a tutelary government, that does not exercise authority one over the other, but exercises compassion and love and charity. That's what Christ was setting up. That's what he appointed his ministers to be servants of, not rulers over the people. They were forbidden to exercise authority. And just 100 years ago, the churches were the absolute source of almost all social welfare in the community. Today, Almost all social welfare is provided by the same government that wants you to go down and get the shot, to get the injection. And they have stated many times, and we could go through those quotes, but I don't know if we'll have time today, that they're going to, like I just said, you could get fired, according to these people, you could get fired and not be able to collect unemployment. They're going to affect your Social Security eventually. They're going to affect you even going down to government offices and complaining. This is the direction they want to go. And the only thing that is going to change that is you change the way you think about community and government. And this is what we talk about all the time on the Keys of the Kingdom. This is what Christ talked about all the time. And it is essential that you learn to love one another. So anyway, I don't know how much time we've taken, but I'm going to turn it over to James to get some of the last words in here, and then we'll call it close. And join us on Keys of the Kingdom on our podcast, and join us on the network to find out more. Go ahead, James. Take it away.
So there is another topic that I'd like to discuss just real briefly, and I think it's a good segue from what we were just talking about, you know, our Christian faith and our values and the principles. There's this thing here in Oregon, if you want to get out of getting the vaccination, there's really only one way to go about that, and it involves a religious exemption. Or medical exemption, although it's harder to get. I think that a lot of the people going for the medical exemption are going to find themselves in some difficulty, because they are going to change the playing field for these exemptions. Medical, of course, you know, there was a woman not too far from here who had gotten a medical exemption, or is going for a medical exemption. Her doctor signed off on it and everything because she's pregnant. And she's in the middle of her pregnancy, and of course, she's probably going to get approved, based on the input and support that she has from her physician. But what happens after she's done having the baby in 9 months? Or after she's done breastfeeding? What is going to be the grounds for her exemption at that point? Or will she find herself back at the same place she sees now, where here in Oregon, we are mandate state employees, healthcare workers, and teachers, educators, and so forth are being mandated to be fully vaccinated by October 18th of this year. Or they could potentially be losing their jobs, their certifications, their licenses, or teacher licenses, whatever it might be. So they're talking a lot about this religious exemption, because this is what the state has suggested people do. Now, this does a number of different things, and I think that a lot of the churches are a little concerned about it. One, you have to basically write out and explain why you have this belief. It probably, if you are going to do it, I'm not going to tell you not to, but you need to keep something in mind. I would suggest keeping it as simple as possible, because it's very difficult for them to argue. You know, I was driving home and God spoke to me and told me not to take the vaccine. I mean, it really could be that simple, I suppose. So, who's going to argue that? How do you argue that? How would the government come back and say, well, we don't really think that you spoke to God?
Well, they can't say that, but one of the things they will look for is a long
history.
And supporting documents. You don't have to be a member of a particular religion or anything.
Correct.
But anyway, all of our ministers have been looking at, as a matter of fact, I got a call coming up in less than an hour, meeting with our ministers from other countries and in this country, addressing the same issue. But you said at one point that you thought that, like, religious exemption might be a little bit of a trap, and yeah. I wasn't sure the thoughts that are.
So apparently I'm not the only one who felt this. I believe my other brother felt the same way, and he was seeing it as a bit of a trap, and I'll explain some of my thoughts behind this. Because imagine, for instance, let's just say I'm going to take your phone here. Okay, I'm taking your phone. It's not really your phone, but I'll just pretend your phone. Okay. I'm just going to take this bridge over. This is your phone. Okay. I'm taking your phone and I'm saying, I don't think you should have a right to it. And I don't think that you should have it. And you say, wait a second. You don't have an authority to take my phone. That's not appropriate. That's not right. You give me my phone back. I said, okay. All right. I'll give you that. I'll give you some options here to get your phone back. You need to sign this piece of paper that I've written up, and you need to fight me on my playing field. You need to meet me where I say
to meet me, and you can only argue the points that I provide you with. If you're going to do battle with the devil, do not play on his
turf.
Yeah. Do not fight him on his ground. Do not play chess with a master in his territory. You're not going to win this because it ain't a home game. Trust me. And they're going to change the ground underneath you. And this is why I feel it's a trap. They are.
Well, they're dragging you into their lane.
Correct. Another reason why, stay in your lane. And you do that on a spiritual level as well. And I think this is what's happening is that they are attempting to not only get you to fight them on their ground, but they're actually subtly, but very definitively legitimizing their authority to take your phone in the first place.
Right. Cause they're making the conditions as to when you can get back the right to choose.
Right. And you're acquiescing to their authority by accepting their rules.
Yeah. The legal term is actually called estoppel.
Yes.
I've talked about it many times. And it's what you need to do is create an estoppel in the other direction.
Right.
And I don't think you can do it unless you really are a part of what Christ was talking about.
You have to get your power from another place, and you have to be on an entirely different playing turf. We'll just use that word. I like that word. So it's literally Darth Vader in Star Wars.
I'm
altering the deal. Pray I don't alter any further.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee that they won't. In fact, I will guarantee you, and I will bet you the farm right now. This is my prediction. I didn't want to get into a whole bunch of opinions. We're talking a lot of facts here on this show, but my opinion, and I suppose actually I have given a lot of opinions on this show. But my prediction would be that within the next year, that bill that we talked about earlier will come back and resurface, and they will take your religious exemption away as well. But they will have it on record that you opposed it based on religious grounds.
And so now that's gone. I mean, it's just like when they people were saying, I don't want the vaccination because it's unapproved. Presto bingo, we approved it. They didn't do it legally.
No, but they
did it.
But they told you it was going to get approved.
Yeah. And so there you are back in.
How does that work? If it's based on science and based on the findings and everything else, and then you have a governor of a state coming out and making a mandate before it's even approved and telling you it will be approved. Doesn't that concern anyone?
Yeah. How did she know?
Is
she reading the medical literature?
I mean, I know that we are. Maybe she is. I don't know. And maybe she's just like, oh, well, it is going to be approved. 99% chance, almost as good as surviving COVID, that it's going to be approved. So this is why I'm highly suspicious of the religious exemption. And there's another reason as well. Because when you have organized religions and other denominations, and if you're a member of one, whether it be the Baptist Church, Catholic Church, whatever it might be,
you're actually not religions, but denominations.
Yeah. Correct. But if you're going to go for a religious exemption, and there's a whole lot of atheists in their own religious right going for religious exemptions right now, which I think is quite hilarious. but see, this is the thing. It's forcing people to lie just to preserve their right to choose.
Right.
And that's dangerous. And you're forcing preachers and priests and ministers of these denominations to even potentially lie to protect their flock because they're concerned and they're worried. And I spoke with a minister whose wife was telling some of the people in her group saying, yeah, you know, if you need anything, you know, my husband will sign your religious exemption. And it was for them, you know, I mean, this is quite serious. They actually have a vaccine injured child. And so they know what it's like. And they've raised that boy to adulthood. And it's been a challenge for them their entire, life as parents. So for them, you know, they feel very strongly about this. But even so, when the wife offered, you know, basically, you know, my husband will take care of this for you, he was like, whoa. Hang on a second. I don't know if I can do that. Because, you know, we have missions that go overseas and they get vaccinated all the time. This isn't a teaching of the church. This isn't a teaching of our denomination to not take vaccinations. There's nothing in it, in our denomination that says or lists this as a sin. So on what grounds do I have on signing that? I can provide testimony to their character and to the soundness of their character. But beyond that, he's like, I'm not sure I could. I could get in a lot of trouble with my diocese and so forth if I'm doing that. And it's understandable. But so you've created a scenario here where you have pastors and ministers and so forth doing whatever they can to protect the public and people from the very government that's supposed to be representing and protecting them. So how did that happen?
Well, that's something we talk about all the time.
You're going to see, before this is over, and I'll try and finish up my thoughts on this. Before this is over, all of us, every single one of us, are going to be challenged on what it is that we truly believe, what we stand for, and what we think, and what we are willing to sacrifice. And we need to articulate those things. We need to know what we stand for. And I've recommended to my community and to the people of Lake County, write me a letter. Just sit down, write something out. Get together with your neighbors, get together with your spouse, whoever it might be. It says wherever two or more are gathered. Find one person besides yourself that agrees with you. Write down your letter, and you can do it on your own, but I would recommend finding someone else. It can be a group of nurses. It can be a coalition of teachers or nurses or whoever else, and state workers and employees. Come together, find something that you do agree on, write it down, and put your names to it. That's what we do as counties, through the counties association, when we write letters to the governor, when we write letters to the legislature, when we approve or disapprove of legislation. We write out a letter spelling out our issues, our grievances, and our problems, and we all write it. And when you get a letter with 90 signatures of county commissioners across 36 counties, that's significant. And it holds a lot of weight. And I think it would hold the same weight if I were to get that kind of a letter with that many signatures from teachers. And it helps me as a local leader. It helps my fellow commissioners on a local level understand and know that we're not just off in our own little silos thinking, you know, oh, we're representing the majority when we mandate vaccines. You know, Kate Brown is in a silo. She's protected by a gaggle, a cabal of a very dedicated socialists and communists. And that believe what they're doing is good, which is the most dangerous among the monsters, are the people that think that what they're doing is good or for the greater good with no remorse over who they hurt to get there. That is a very dangerous thing to do and a thing to have in your society. And we have it now in spades. And so you're going to see pastors like you saw in Canada this last week, ministers getting arrested in their own household for having church services in their backyard. And you have the Mountie police officer arresting him saying, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing my job. And we've talked about this before. The most patriotic soldiers of our century were probably the Nazis.
Right.
The most dedicated. We're just doing our job. I'm just standing here guarding this barbed wire fence. I'm just doing my job. I'm just loading this boxcar. I'm just doing my job. You know, and to me, that creates a very serious issue to me. And I'm just going to talk about this concept for a second, because when you have someone that says, I'm just doing my job, there is one of two things happening with that individual. One is they do not have a conscience. They don't care who they hurt. And I personally believe that they are no longer human. They have a serious disconnect with humanity.
Compassion of humanity.
No empathy. None. Or they do care and they do go home at night and they maybe even cry a little bit. They feel bad. They have guilt. They have remorse over the things they did, but they have to provide for their family and they're struggling, in which case they just don't have a spine.
Well,
so one of those things is true. There is no third. They either do not have the spine to stand up for what they feel is right, regardless of whatever excuses or justifications they make, or they go home and they sleep just fine because they don't care, which is a serious problem.
Which is why Christ says it's a prerequisite of Christianity. And back to the denomination thing is that there's only one common denominator in Christianity. It's not the denominations of churches. It's Christ.
Right.
And Christ says you have to love your neighbor as yourself.
But
if you're not doing that, you will load your neighbor on a boxcar so that you can keep your job.
I'm reminded of a quote from the governor of New York, Cuomo, who came out and he was making a speech and he said, we have to remember the goal. The goal is to go out there and knock on doors. And he uses that. He's like, knock on doors, get people outside and get them into the car and drive them down there and get a shot in their arm. Get them, put them in those cars and drive them out and get that shot in their arm. That's the goal. And I remember watching that with my fellow commissioners and we looked at each other and I made the comment, well, at least they're cars and not boxcars. Which one is worse? I don't know. You know, but we thought to ourselves and that was the place that we went in our minds because that's what we heard is this person who's supposed to be a leader for his state being completely beside himself and even to the point of forcing people out of their homes and getting them down there and getting those shots into their arms.
All for a flu that has a 99.3 survival rate or better.
So they're going to argue that with an additional variance, which, you know, of course, we could sit here and argue that, well, it's very possible that those variants are coming from the vaccinated population. But there's going to be push and shove. And this is why, as long as there's debate over this issue, there needs to remain in the factor a choice for the individual. If someone wants to get vaccinated, you know, I'm not going to hold you down and stop you any more than I'm going to hold you down and put a vaccine into your arm. You know, you have every right to just go ahead and do that. And I, even though I could make an argument, if it is proven that the variants are coming from the vaccinated population, that you're putting me at risk.
Well, that's what
by producing an additional
Dr.
variant.
Bhakti is stating, Sukarat Bhakti, who is the most cited immunologist and or virologist in the nation of Germany, in the history of Germany, mm-hmm. he says that anyone who goes and gets this vaccination is contributing to the decimation of the human population. And he's not just saying that.
No.
This is a top scientist. Now, of course, he's been canceled by the media, but his videos are still around that were made by people who interviewed him. But
I think there's hope, though, too. I don't want to end this on a negative note because
no.
I really do think that if you are gathering together with your neighbors and those around you, there is an exercise that takes place when you do this, when you write out what you think, get a hold of your local leaders, talk to them about these things. But more importantly, even if you never send the letter, write out what you do believe, because when people are put up against the wall, trust me, you will be tested on what you really do believe. I mean, that officer in Canada, he had decided what he believed was, I'm just doing my job. Maybe there will come a day when he is forced to question even that concept. But right now, that's where he's at. So the question is, where are you? And what are you prepared to do? It's a great line from the film Boondock Saints, when the son looks at his dad and he says, how far do we take this? And he says, the question is not how far. The question is whether or not you possess to go as far as is needed. And that is what you need to ask yourself, because it is a psychological and therapeutic exercise to go through the process of understanding and knowing what you actually believe. Paint a scenario for yourself. What would you do? What do you truly believe? And find people that you do agree with, and you can find there's going to be people that are for the vaccine and they're perfectly fine with it, and they just don't believe that it should be forced on the population, which is a perfectly legitimate place to be. And then there's going to be people who are absolutely diametrically opposed to any kind of a vaccine whatsoever. And there's going to be the people that are going to be just opposed to it until it's fully tested, like Robert Kennedy Jr., who say, you know, like, I just think it needs to be safe. And it's not proven to me that it's safe yet. We rushed this through. And like thalidomide, whatever it might be, you know, where you have thousands and thousands of injured, crippled babies over this entire population, and then all of a sudden, and granted, it wasn't actually FDA approved until the 90s, and it was in the 60s and 50s and so forth.
It's actually thalidomide still being was actually used. Hurt.
It's still being used.
It's used to treat leprosy.
Yeah, all sorts of different things. So, there is danger.
And it's still producing birth defects.
And it's still producing birth defects.
And people are still using it.
So there's just, I just think that we need to, as individuals, gather with those that we can find that we agree with. It's okay if not everyone agrees with us. and work with our neighbor, get to know them and talk about these things and have those discussions. I think that there's a lot of good coming from the days that we see unfolding. One is that it is exposing thousands, hundreds of thousands, potentially small little dictators throughout our entire nation. And those who cannot do anything other than accept the massive amounts of authority and power that is being given to them by the people. They need to be careful. Leaders everywhere must be careful now more than ever that they do not fall on that sword. And so I just think that there is hope, but this isn't going to be solved by a couple commissioners or senators pounding their fists into the table and saying, no, this is going to be solved when the people rise up and realize that they truly are slaves already.
Before they can rise up, they need to come together, which is if isolation is a tool of despots coming together, which of course is what Christ says, forsake not the coming together, is a key element. Now you have to come together with humility, not egoism, so that you can actually see, well, you know, I might be wrong about this and I might be wrong about that. I always thought it was amazing when the first English, or not was that actually the first well-known English Bible translated into English, which was the Wycliffe Bible. In the foreword, it said, this is the book for the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. And of course, that's where Lincoln gets the phrase. He didn't make it up himself. He got it out of the Bible. But I wanted to shift gears here real quick, as in the Karen Kingston video, which you could probably only find on places like BitChute. I know it's on BitChute. It may be on some of the other medias. Very interesting. She did quote some things, and I was confused when I went and looked up everything she was quoting to see if it was true. And I want to touch on it before we finish. She talked about Title 21, Section 564. She says is reckless and has no merit. And so I went to look that up, and I thought, since she said Title 21, it's in the U.S. codes. It's not in the U.S. codes. It's in, it's actually, there's other numbers involved, and I won't go into all of them, but basically it's in the CFRs, and the CFRs are not passed law. There may be some laws that have been passed that are in the CFRs, but CFRs is the Code of Federal Regulations. So these are all the result of bureaucrats. And one of the bureaucrats that penned 564 is Alex Azar II. And he was the Secretary of Health and Human Services for a while. He was a lot of other things over the years because he's a professional politician and listed as a American politician, attorney, businessman, and lobbyist, and former pharmaceutical executive who served in the United States Secretary of Health and Human Services from 2018 to 2021. And during that period, he wrote this 564. And Karen has some serious problems with it, and you can go look at the video to find out more about that. But if she also mentions Title 21 U.S. Code 312.23, but it's actually, some of this is CFRs, and it has to do with this investigational new drug application, often referred to as IND. You'll see that pop up, IND. What you're seeing, the use of this new vaccine, Karen doesn't even want to call it a vaccine. A lot of other doctors don't want to call it a vaccine because it doesn't really fit the description, the legal description of a vaccine. But it's an investigational new drug being tested on a human population. It is not being tested on animals except for you. And so I'm just pointing out that this Title 21, one was 312.23. These are often in the CFRs. They're not in the actual U.S. code. They're not laws. They're administrative rules. You're often subject to administrative rules because of, going back to what I said, is this, you know, civil rights connected to the administration of government and civil rights not connected to the administration of government. And Christ was showing us a way to not become subject to the administration of government by coming together and caring for one another as much as we care about ourselves. So there was also 313.42, 312.42, and that is about clinical holds and requests for modification. And they have a number of sections underneath that. You're not going to follow all this, but I'm throwing out the numbers so you can check it. But In general, a clinical hold is an order issued by the FDA to sponsor, to delay a proposed clinical investigation. That's what we're seeing with this mass vaccination. This is a clinical investigation, an IND. They applied for the right to do this. They actually mentioned pregnant lab rats in the application. And I guess that's you now, to suspend it in an ongoing investigation. I don't, at the present, with the present regime, I don't think you're going to overthrow it. But if you were to come together and create a class action suit where you could get this into a high enough court, and I don't trust the courts, but I'm talking about buying time here, you might be able to collectively to stop this, create this clinical hold, because there's ample evidence to bring up that there's violations of not only Section A, but Section A3. The investigation brochure is misleading, erroneous, or materials incomplete. In other words, some of the ingredients that they say that they're giving you is not complete. And there's ample evidence that there is secret ingredients that they're not publishing. Now, people who are, because they actually paid to have these, even Gates said that there were ingredients that were proprietary and secret that they were not publishing. And because it's considered trade secrets, well, that we know at least one of those is graphene oxide because of whistleblowers and people who do get access to that secret information. And graphene oxide is a toxin that's in there, and but you won't see it on the label. So these violations of their rules, 21 USC 31342 I, human subjects are or would be exposed to an unreasonable and significant risk of illness and injury. You need to bring that case into the courts to stop and delay this progressiveness. And also the byproduct of that is education of the people. And Section 3 of that same section, investigator brochure is misleading, erroneous, or materially incomplete, which of course it is because they don't include all the ingredients, and you can't make an informed consent if you don't have all the ingredients. Number 5, the IND is for the study of an investigational drug intended to treat a life-threatening disease or condition that affects both genders and men and women with reproductive potential who have the disease or condition being studied are excluded from eligibility because of the risk or potential risk from use of the investigational drug. It, basically, without going into the entire phraseology of this, is the fact that this investigational drug does create a threat. Once you bring it into court, you should get time to prove that life-threatening disease. A good, competent lawyer, which you probably can't afford individually, but you could collectively, could file motions that they need to stop this investigation until these questions are answered, because they would be violating their own rules if they continued. And, you know, it, I was trying to find a couple other, oh, there's one here. I just went by it real quick. Another drug under investigation or approval for the same indication and available to the same patent population has demonstrated a better potential benefit-risk balance. And, of course, that's number 5. And, of course, that would be ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and a half a dozen other treatments that are very successful, which is why they shut that down. Because if that exists, they can't continue with their study. Then you have reason to hold. But if you don't bring this into court, which is the other branch of your government, you're going to remain vulnerable and your neighbors are going to remain vulnerable, and you cannot effectively bring it into court unless you come together to do so. The final byproduct of coming together and doing so, and that is not our only alternative of bringing this up, is that you will learn amongst yourselves who you can trust, who will stick it out, persevere to the end, a word that Christ uses, who will strive with you because they care about you as much as they care about themselves. So if you want, you know, people are saying, what do I do? What do I do? Well, it's the same thing Christ has been saying from the beginning. Do not forsake the gathering together. Care about one another as much as you care about yourself. Create networks of charity based on faith, hope, and charity, not force, fear, and fealty, which is what the other systems of the world are based on. You know, fealty, you say, well, how does that work in? Well, James told you, if you apply to them and they give you permission at the moment because of a religious exemption, not to take the shot, when they take their religious exemption away, you've already given them jurisdiction.
Right.
Because you applied to them on their level, on their turf, on their playing field. Now, in a class action suit, some of you are already dependent upon the system. So within that system, I can't bring this class action suit. The ministers of the church can't bring this class action suit. But those of you who are in the system of the world, righteous mammon or not, you can do this. And it's a stopgap deal, because I don't think COVID and the vaccines is the end game. They're going to come up with something else farther down the road, but we'll have to save that for another program. So anyway, I want to thank James for showing up and taking the time to do this. I've only got minutes away from our minister call, mm-hmm. where we'll be talking to all kinds of other ministers. If you want to know what we talk about, join the network. Join a free assembly. That's our congregations are free assemblies, and they will share the information with you free. All our books are free online. Our services are freely given, and because we're following the patterns that Christ laid down. If you want to know more, go to preparingyou.com or hisholychurch.org, but mostly join the network. And until then, peace on your house, and may God be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I thought I'd add a little addendum to the show that we just did with James and some of the topics that we went over, because I had conversations with people about the show already, asking some questions because they are seeing, you know, we talked about the Oregon Health Authority. That was just a bureaucratic creation of the governor, and she appoints the people who run it, and the people who run it aren't even really medical experts, which is, in my opinion, would be kind of almost insane. They are political appointees based on their politics, and they're often payoff jobs, and they look for people who will support their agenda. And that's just the way it is in politics, because you've created offices of power, and people who seek power seek office, and people who seek power always want more power. If you create offices of service, which is what Christ did, then people who seek to serve will seek those offices. But the key element is, again, the people, because the people put these people in power. The people that are in power today in America are in power because of the sloth of the people, because of the selfishness of the people, because of the egoism of the people, not because a fraudulent vote counts. Now, there may have been fraudulent vote counts, but that is the product of apathy and sloth on the part of the people, not to say, you know, and a lack of common sense. Because they don't see clearly, because they sit in darkness. And they sit in darkness because they don't want to see the truth about themselves. All these things are related. Once you start seeing that you have been slothful, you have been prideful, you have been selfish, and then start turning around in your thinking and putting that new thinking that you shouldn't be selfish, you shouldn't be slothful. I mean, we see it with the CRT, critical race theory. People are saying that you're not all victims, it's not a product of racism, that you're only victim of your own sloth, you're only victim of your own failure to do and make the right choices. This goes for everything. And then coming together with other people who want to seek to make the right choices, have this moral character, have these moral standards, this is what makes the difference. There is no formula for figuring out, oh, if I go here, do this, do this, do that, then everything will work out. It doesn't work that way, because evil is as flexible as anybody else. And so evil will use your weakness against you. Like the famous book, The Screwtape Letters, he's always using the individual's weaknesses against him. And, of course, that's actually built into nature. I always say, if a man thinks he is wise, let him marry. If he thinks he is patient, let him have children. Because by the nature of those relationships, you're going to have to deal with things that you probably don't want to deal with, either because you're sloth or egotistical or just don't want to see the truth about yourself. your own weaknesses. And when you don't, then those relationships of husband and wife and mother and father and child don't work out well. And they don't work out well because of something you're not seeing, and something that you, if you do see, you also have to be willing to put into practice, into action. You cannot think your way into the kingdom of God. Belief is not an idea that exercises itself in the pew, but out in the real world. So with that said, I'm going to deal with at least one question that came up, and maybe we'll deal with others. The question came to me is this regarding connecting the dots between health and medical concerns and administrative and or executive authority. And he goes on to say, state chief health officer's power is the closest link I found thus far. Well, yeah, things have morphed over the years. The original United States government didn't really have a health authority. Actually, if you were going to be looking for anybody, it seemed like in Massachusetts, I think it was actually Paul Revere was the first health authority. But the health authority didn't have any authority over what doctor you could go to or anything like that. But they were just simply looking at things that they could do to improve the healthy conditions of that particular Boston city or that municipality. And, of course, the greatest boon to health was plumbing, fresh water, sanitation, getting rid of garbage. But a great deal of that has to do with individual practices. And, of course, sloth and avarice are countering those basic concepts of human health. The idea of the health authority dictating all these different things, I mean, everything from seatbelt laws, you have to wear a seatbelt because if you go through the window and get damaged or crippled, that the government's going to probably have to take care of you. And so this is where they get that authority. It's what becomes a paternal authority, parens patria, because you're making the state your father. And we write articles about this. Christ talked about this, called No Man Father. You don't want to make the state your father, your benefactor, your plenipotentiary or tutelary benefactor. Whoever becomes your tutelary benefactor will become your tutelary despot, according to Alexis. Legal charity is not real charity. Forced charity is not real charity. If you move away from free will offerings to support the needy of your society, you move away from liberty. This is a basic idea. This is the problem. It's not that there are state health authorities, etc. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I'm going to take you to the layers and layers that create the problem and the formula for dissolving the problem. He says, but he doesn't know if the state chief health officer authority is consistent in all states. And of course it isn't. I mentioned it in this previous recording that the chief health authority, according to their rules in the state, is the local county commissioner. Now, in the kingdom of God, the chief health authority over you is you, because the kingdom of God is composed of individuals. And in your family, it would be your father, and chances are your father is only backing up your mother, because chances are your mother is the big caregiver. She's the one that's going to create the formulas in the kitchen that is your medicine, you know, because let your food be your medicine, and your mom and your wife are the ones who often are preparing the food, which is no small responsibility, which makes her one of the chief health authorities in the family. One of them, because she's supposedly working no more twain, but one with her husband to create a healthy environment for the children to bring up the next generation of society. Societies are born in the family. There probably is a chain of command, and you can look at it, but it's complicated because you have all these different authorities, and they are overlapping, and they are overlapping with individuals. And I was contemplating this morning when I first got up, but it's almost so complicated to explain. I mean, you have federal jurisdiction. Within the federal jurisdiction, you have state jurisdiction. Well, originally you had, with the Constitution, you had state jurisdiction. And outside of state jurisdiction, you had the federal jurisdiction, because the federal government was not allowed to exercise authority within the states. So it was literally a separate jurisdiction created by the states, not by the people. The United States was not created by the people. It wasn't put to a popular vote or anything. So you start seeing this, well, that doesn't seem to be the case now. Well, that's because things are constantly in the state of morphing. And one of the processes of that morphing is the people making contracts, covenants, and constitutions with the people, with the government, with making agreements with the government. And also with the people neglecting the responsibilities of taking care of one another through faith, hope, and charity. Their movement from true and fervent charity into a realm of legal charity ends up binding and connecting the people in these different jurisdictions. When the state goes to the federal government for revenue sharing, the state loses more and more of its sovereignty. The Civil War, a great deal of the sovereignty of the states was undermined by the Civil War, but more has been undermined by revenue sharing. And of course, you know, we give examples in the book Covenants of the Gods, you know, 15 different chapters that show you 15 different spokes of a wheel of tyranny that come about because people go and make agreements. In the previous program with James, we were talking about applying for a religious exemption. Now, I'm not telling anybody don't do that. I'm just saying there's other aspects. There's consequences for doing that because you're going to be giving them jurisdiction to grant you that exemption. But we shouldn't make too much worry about that because most of you have already granted them jurisdiction in a half a dozen different ways. An employee of the government is different than someone who is employed in the private sector. Now, they're both employee of the state government is employed by the state government, but the state governments are now subject a great deal to federal regulations, which is why we have federal laws controlling the employment in state governments. By the same token, we have federal laws that bypass the state and control the way in which you employ in private companies within the state that are maybe only incorporated by the state, but still are subject to federal regulations of employment. Well, is that because, but the state business was incorporated to the state, so why does the federal government get to dictate how you employ people in your employment? Because the people have connected themselves to the federal government by applying for a federal ID number, such as Social Security or EIN or TIN. And so all this is overlapping. There is no, like, you know, if you get into the maze, you can go and say, oh, well, we can pull out this jurisdiction here, or he's made this application here, he's applied for this license here, he's incorporated over here. So many people think that, oh, the church is condemned because it's incorporated to the state. Well, all it means is when you incorporate the state that all other previous incorporation is gone. So you're no longer incorporated by Jesus Christ. It doesn't have anything to do with the eternity of your soul. But it may have to do with the events in the jurisdictions in the world because Jesus never incorporated with Rome. He never incorporated with Herod. Jesus was a corporate entity, a state corporate entity himself. He was the king. The corporate power of the king of Judea rested with Jesus when he became the king of Judea. And he was the rightful heir of the throne of David. He was Hosanna in the highest, the highest son of David. So these things play an important part. But if you think that you're going to get to a place of liberty through going through this maze with cleverness, that's a bit of witchcraft. Doesn't work that way. It's very simple. Some of the codified laws are positive law, and some are not positive law because of the lack of codification in them, but they're written down in the U.S. codes. But then other rules are administrative laws. I mean, we have Oregon administrative rules, and that's OARs. You can look them up separately, or you can look up ORSs. Oregon Revised Statutes. Well, they're statutes. They're being revised constantly because they're changing laws. They're passing laws in the legislature. But then also there's federal laws. So, you know, one of the things that we're pointing out that at one point is that the state is mandating all kinds of things to federal citizens trying to control their health. That the fact is ultimately those federal citizens can call upon the federal government to protect them from the state. But I wouldn't count on the federal government now because all of them have been infested with the spirit of tyranny because the people are a bunch of little tyrants. People don't want to love their neighbor. They want to rule over their neighbor. And vast numbers of people, that's what you see in the extreme where they want to drive you down and force you to get vaccinated. Having no understanding of, you know, variants and pathogenic priming or ADE or what the top scientists are actually saying. They don't even know that because their source of truth is places like CNN. CNN has no authority, but it has a lot of authority over the minds of people. MSNBC has a lot of authority. CDC, that's not an elected office. Those people are appointed. They have no authority based on voting. It's an administrative bureaucracy that comes up, and people who are put in these places, FDA, people who are put in these places, they jump from FDA to pharmaceutical and then back to FDA. It's all a chaos of power and control. The only salvation is to sit down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands and daily sacrifice something every day for the good of somebody else you don't even know. That's right. It's the red button in reverse. The red button is you push this red button, somebody somewhere will suffer or die, but you will be given a reward. You will be given a check for $1 billion. That was the story of the red button. And then when the guy pushes the red button, instantly somebody shows up at his door, hands him a check for $1 billion, and then it takes the little box with the red button and it's going somewhere else. And the guy knew that when he pushed the button, he was told that somebody he doesn't even know would die. And he finally pushes the red button, and he gets the check, and he's just thrilled. He's looking at the check, and the guy's taking the box with the button out, and the guy says, where are you going to go with that? And he says, I'm going to give it to somebody you absolutely do not know. And presumably, now the new guy will have the right and the power to push that button, and the guy that got the check will die. So what goes around comes around. So that it's a fictional story that is trying to make a point. And what Christ was showing you, I guess, is the blue button. It's the other way to go. It said, if you push this button, somebody you don't even know will benefit. And that's what charity is all about. That's what fervent charity is about. That is what casting your bread upon the waters is all about. It has a metaphysical power in the universe that will begin to lighten up the room where you now sit in darkness. It will open up your eyes. You do not need to know, most of you do not need to know all the eccentricities and technicalities of all this stuff. You need to know the way of Christ. And the way of Christ is that you sit down together with 9 other people, connect yourself with 100 other people, connect yourself with 10,000 other people through charity, through love, and you give it to somebody else. You make a sacrifice in your life, some way or another. I don't care really how you do it, but you do it out of love. Now, you probably won't always do it out of love. I don't want you to do it religiously, automatically. I want you to do it because it's written on your heart. And so then you have to still your mind, quiet down, and find out what is on your heart. What is on your mind? And this is why we teach meditation as well. Meditation is just waiting upon the Lord, just saying, I can't solve this. I can't figure it out. See, that's one of the great dangers, is that we think we can figure it out. We can solve it. No, we can't. We're not smart enough. We may be very smart, but we're not smart enough to figure out and know exactly what. There's too many variables. There's too many things you can't even see or imagine. In the church established by Christ, not all these other churches out here. These other churches out here, they do things like somebody gives money to the church and they supposedly gave it away and gave it to the church, but then they go get on the board of directors and they tell the pastor how he can spend the money that they supposedly just gave to Christ. Well, they didn't really give it up. But the way Christ set it up is that you give whatever you give to a minister. I mean, you can give to individuals, certainly, but that's not a kingdom. That's just individual giving. In the kingdom of God, you give to a minister of your choice, and you can give to your minister, you can give to other people's ministers, you can give to anybody you want. There's no restrictions on that. But the actual flow would be through this structure of tens, hundreds, and thousands, where you give to your minister, and then he has the choice. You've given him the power of choice, the exousia, over that gift. If you give properly, you will give him power to give properly. He still has the choice, but you are empowering him to do that. Now, since the giving is ongoing and you can change your mind and change your minister at any time, this becomes an extremely flexible system of government. But you have to realize that Christ was preaching a government. It's a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. It's a government that does not exercise authority one over the other. It is a government organized according to the perfect law of liberty. It is a government that takes care of the needy of society, including the widows and orphans, but without weakening them, with the intent of strengthening them. It's a government unselfish, not filled with egoism, not filled with little tyrants, and so therefore it does not produce a big tyrant. That's the key. What goes on in your heart and in your mind? This is why Christ says, the kingdom of heaven is within you, so that I may write upon your heart and your mind. Who? The Holy Spirit, write upon your heart and your mind. This is the solution. All the things that we were talking about, you know, state citizenships and estoppels and all these kinds of things, we're showing you how their system works, not so that you can overthrow it. Maybe so that, you know, we're showing you where the quicksand is, you know, so you don't step in it. But the key thing is to sit down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands and come together in the name of Christ, which is a character that came to serve, to save others, not to save himself. You don't go to church for what you can get out of it. You go to church for what you can give. This is why I take you back again. The important thing is that you give something every day, every moment, time, thought, energy, you know, contributions, whatever. You contribute some of your time. Share the articles with other people. Share the truth with other people. Walk in forgiveness. Walk in love. Walk in charity. That's a skill. That's an art. It is the art of freedom that we have forgotten. Because for the last 100 years, we've been moving away from the kingdom of God towards the kingdom of Satan, the socialist, communist death trap of totalitarianism. And so we have to turn around and go the other way. And so I'm not going to go into it all, but yeah, there are regulations, which are administrative rules. But then just to have this all codified out where you have codes and laws and regulations and administrative new rules and memos, then you have to go over and look at yourself. Did you take a stimulus check? Did you apply for an exemption? Did you get a marriage license? Did you get a driver's license? Do you have a social security number? Getting rid of all those things, throwing them out the window, is not going to make you free. Again, I'm going back. What's going to make you free is following the way of Christ, laying down your life for your fellow man, so that you may pick your life up more abundantly, so that you can lay it down again for your fellow man in righteousness, in a way that strengthens your fellow man. Sign up for our podcast. Sign up for the network. Sit down in the tens, hundreds, and thousands. Get into the Living Network by joining one of the free assemblies. Even if you're too far away to actually meet, start making a phone call. Start spreading the news so that we get more and more people coming to the network worldwide. And then actually start doing what Christ did, because Rome is doing what Rome did. And so the solution remains the same. God bless and peace on your house.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.